This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It's my pleasure to welcome Tim Carney to the show. He is a senior political columnist for the Washington Examiner and a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and author of The Big Ripoff, How Big Businesses and Big Government Steal Your Money. Tim, welcome. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah, it's good to have you on. And this is a hot topic, unfortunately, but it's very true. And you know, Tim, it's interesting because when you look at the political divide on the left and the right, you know, it seems like one side is for big business and against big government, but I kind of think it's just a big wrestling match. It's fake. You know, this is like a fake dichotomy. It's sort of the same thing almost nowadays, at least. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think the professional wrestling analogy there is apt, that very often big business and big government are not, in fact, the opponents, although they fool, you know, Democrats and Republicans into thinking they are, but often they're the allies. And what they want are regulations that keep out competitors. They want handouts, corporate welfare, bailouts, eminent domain taking, mandates. And the losers end up being consumers, small businessmen, people who want to be small businessmen, and taxpayers.
Yeah, or those small business people that want to be medium-sized business people that can't,
yep,
they can't grow because of the onerous regulations. So it's just interesting to me that, you know, you'll see the people who run the corporatocracy, you know, they'll be on TV or in media complaining and grousing about government regulation. But what they're secretly thinking, I think, is they're thinking, you know, gosh, this regulation is great because it's just impossible for new companies to enter the market and compete with us. This is certainly true on Wall Street with the securities laws. Now, you know, with the Jobs Act, maybe there will be a bit of a shift there and crowdfunding and so forth. But, you know, I mean, talk about that a little bit. You know, it sounds like we agree. Yeah.
So a couple of my favorite examples are the tax preparers. So you think of H&R Block, for example. I was reading an analyst at one of the banks saying, you know, they give out, how's this company doing? What are their prospects? And they were looking at H&R Block. And they said, oh, here, H&R Block, the biggest tax preparer in the country, is probably going to do well over coming years because the new regulations from the IRS really make it much harder for smaller businesses or independent operators to function as tax preparers. And so H&R Block has the size to deal with and to absorb the cost of these regulations and this regulation should crowd out some of their competitors. And sure enough, when small tax preparers sued to block it, you had the government saying, well, these regulations can't be that onerous. Even H&R Block supports them. And there's this happens in all sorts of industries. And you saw Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan, saying, you know, there's a lot of things about this Dodd-Frank financial regulation that I don't like, and there are ways in which it will definitely hurt our bank. But on another level, it protects us. He used the term a moat. He said that these regulations created a moat, and it's a beautiful image. It digs this trench. So the guys who are already, you know, in the middle, on the island, in the castle, they get to stay there, and they have protection from competition. And if that's one of the major effects of regulation, then you can see that it actually hurts consumers rather than protecting
them. Yeah, it's just, it's all the entrenched interests, they can deal with it. You know, if you want to take your company public or you want to maintain your company as a public company, if you're big, you know, you can spend $1 million on compliance. If you're little, you can't even play the game. It's just, you know, who's representing the small business out there, Tim? I mean, no, you know, where is their lobbying group? I mean, is it, you know, what, the Chamber of Commerce? I don't know. You know, there's a couple groups. But
so, the Chamber of Commerce is good when it comes to opposing regulations. But they also, they end up supporting spending, big spending, stimulus, bailouts. And again, those things, even those primarily go to the big guys, the guys who can afford to hire the lobbyists, the consultant, the former congressional aide or the former congressman. They, the guys who can afford to hire them are the people who are going to get the hands, their hands on most of the government money when that's being handed out. And one of the problems is, you know, economists describe it as concentrated benefits with diffuse costs. Again, the benefits of a government program, a regulation, a subsidy, go to a small group who, and they get it a lot. If you guys have a $1 billion subsidy and it goes to one company, it costs every taxpayer about $3. So who's going to lobby harder, the big guys who get the handout or the little guys who are paying it? And it's the same with these protective regulations, where the businesses that are hurt are often businesses that haven't even come into being. It's a guy who says, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to start up a food truck and compete with these restaurants. And then he starts dealing with the rules and the regulations and says, okay, never mind. So there isn't really a lobby for the businesses that want to exist but don't
yet exist. Tim, that's a great point. You know, it's the ones that don't yet exist. I mean, there's that principle in economics. You never hear the dogs that don't bark. And they don't bark because they don't exist yet. They might exist, you know, but we'll never know if they could enter and if they could play the game.
Exactly. And so this is the couple times you asked where the lobby is, the couple times that I feel like the small guys won are the best demonstrations that these rules end up hurting consumers. And here in D.C., we've had a couple of fights, one over food trucks, where the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington was saying we should severely limit where food trucks are allowed to park. And their argument at times is openly protectionist, just said, look, we've invested a lot in these communities, and these food trucks will hurt us. And then the other one had to do with Uber, where the taxi cabs, the unions, and the companies that run the taxi cabs around here didn't want this, you know, smartphone powered, basically limo service.
Much better system
being allowed, and so they propose all sorts of rules that would either bar Uber or at least really limit their activity, or at least make sure that another competitor doesn't come in. And in both of those cases, there was a strong public pushback, and it's because the consumers of these were sort of rich and upper middle class, young, politically active, urban progressives, where all of a sudden they said, huh, maybe these regulations aren't helping us. They're helping the incumbent businesses, hurting consumers, hurting would-be competitors, and there the big guys have actually lost because the consumer base was active enough to apply pressure to the politicians.
Yeah, that's, you know, it just kind of begs the question, and I'm probably going to offend someone here, I'm sure, but you know, like I debate these things with people on the left, you know, with Democrats, and I just can't help but thinking, how can Democrats be so dumb? How can they not see this? They're always pleading for more regulation. When the financial crisis happened, you know, they were saying, oh, well, you know, these big companies, they weren't regulated enough, you know, that's why it all happened. And, you know, like, that's the surface argument, and I can see, you know, how one would think that. But what we never hear about is the fact that they became too big to fail because of the regulations. You know, you can't compete with Lehman Brothers. You know, you can't compete with J.P. Morgan. Well, I mean, you know, Lehman Brothers is obviously an old example, but, you know, you get the idea.
Yeah, and so a lot of what I like to point out is that if you are somebody who doesn't like big business dominance, if you're somebody who loves small business, loves local business, then in a lot of cases, I would argue in almost all, but at least anybody would say in a lot of cases, the right answer here is not, in fact, more government regulation, but is the opposite, is letting people not only getting rid of regulation, but also getting rid of the spending, which, as I said, goes to benefit the biggest guys. We have these, one example I write a lot about are export subsidies. The Export-Import Bank is not a bank, it's a government agency, and it subsidizes exports. And so they'll always talk about, oh, here's a small pickle producer who goes ahead and gets these subsidies, and it really helped her grow. But guess what? 80% of Export-Import Bank subsidies go to big businesses. And the small businesses who get the other 20%, they're defined, in some cases, they can be up to 1,500 employees, okay? And not only that, but a third of Export-Import Bank subsidies go to one business, Boeing, which is the largest exporter in America. And so when the government sets up these programs, it helps the big guys. One thing I always say is whenever something is put in the arena of government, it becomes a home game for big business.
Yeah, it does. Okay, so what are some action steps that people can take? What can we do about this? It just seems like you get these entrenched interests, and they can just never be dislodged. They're so powerful, and they have such scale. I mean, is there anything that can be done?
Well, first I'll say the reasons to be depressed. It is a self-reinforcing thing. The politicians and the lobbyists and the big businesses that can hire them become an inside circle, and they can all benefit each other. And how can everybody be benefiting in this sort of situation? Well, there's two ways in any kind of, you know, economy that everybody benefits. One is if there's actual creativity and growth and creation, but that's not happening here. The other is if they can extract wealth from everybody else, and that's exactly what's going on here. And so everybody in power is benefiting, and everybody out of power is losing. So that's the depressing part of the answer. On the other side, I have seen things like technology creating these decentralizing effects. The way that things like Uber and food trucks have been able to win, and then there was a law called the Stop Online Piracy Act, SOPA, a couple years back. These had all the special interests, all the insiders behind it, and the small guys won because of sort of organizing over the internet and over social media. So that's one half of it. And then the other half is just the political pressure. I think the Tea Party has been a very good source within the Republican Party, because what it is all of a sudden there are politicians who, if they have a message that really resonates with people around the country, they can suddenly raise money, because you need money to win an election. They can raise money from them instead of doing what the Republicans have always done before, which is only raise money from the business lobbyists. And so now there's a way to get, it's easier to sort of get grassroots money and grassroots organizing. So that's sort of the hopeful thing, that there can be a push where people will be, there's money coming in based on what people believe in and not just on people who stand to profit from a specific policy.
Yeah, that's nice. And hopefully technology will allow us to do that. I mean, you know, do you really think the problem is mostly the business of lobbying and the lobbyist?
So, I mean, lobbying, first of all, I should say, is a constitutionally protected right. We would never want a world in which nobody has the right to go and try to tell congressmen either what they need or how they're going to mess everything up or anything like that. But on the other hand, the problem I see is not the lobbying, but the incentives that the lobbying industry creates for the people who are supposed to be our public servants. The revolving door is what we call it. The revolving door is where when you leave Congress, if you've served a couple terms, you are guaranteed to be paid a ton of money, often $1 million, to be a lobbyist for special interests, often for a firm that represents a handful of businesses. And if you're a top-level congressional staffer, you might be making, you know, a decent salary, $140,000, but you're raising kids, you're in D.C., it's expensive. Lobbying firm comes, says, we'll hire you away for $500,000. And they go and they do that. So then these lobbying firms have these guys who have direct access to their old bosses or to their old underlings who are now the chief of staff. And so that gives them undue influence. But again, go back to what their incentives were when they were on the Hill. It was to play on Capitol Hill. It was to play ball with the special interests. It was to make sure, even if you're not necessarily going to vote how they're going to vote, but to schmooze and to listen to them and to be reasonable by their standards to make sure you're going to get hired. And so that is the biggest thing rigging the game against the hope for fairer stuff, is the fact that these guys' incentives, the staffers and the elected politicians, their incentives are to play ball with this revolving door system.
Yeah, and you have that too going on within the government agencies, of course. You know, you have the auditor or examiner who works for the SEC, and then they go and they investigate a certain company, say it's Goldman Sachs, for example, and somehow a few years later they seem to end up working for Goldman Sachs. Now, you know, to argue that there wasn't some sort of subtle bribe there, if not an overt one, like, hey, we'll hire you and, you know, quadruple your pay, can't the Goldman Sachs guy sit across them from the table and while they're doing their work and say, hey, you're really good at your job. You know, maybe you should come to work for us someday. And, you know, now they're...
Jack Abramoff, who went to jail for illegal lobbying practices, used to tell a story like that, how he'd be trying to persuade some congressman staffer to put in an earmark or something, and then one day they'd be socializing, not talking about work at all. And he'd say, by the way, you know, I know you love working on the Hill. Your boss is a great guy. I know you're good at what you do, but if you're ever looking for a place, you fit in really well at our firm. Yeah. And once he said that, he had them in the back.
I mean, this is just disgusting. You know, I'm sure this happens at every level of the SEC, the FDA, the FAA, the FCC. I mean, this is unbelievable that this stuff is allowed to happen, right?
Yep. The problem is they try to regulate the lobbyists when the people, I think, who need the regulations are in government, are the politicians and the staffers. I think that we always worry about Big Brother, which is government watching us. One of the terms people use in circles in Washington, D.C. is little sister. We ought to be able to spy on them better. If a congressman has a meeting with a lobbyist, we should know that basically right away. When the day's over, it should be posted as to who they met with. So we can say, why were you talking to J.P. Morgan? And he might be saying, you know what, we were talking to J.P. Morgan lobbyists because they were explaining how this one rule was crafted in a way that hurts everybody in the industry. And the same with their campaign contributions. So politicians, just like I could go into my bank account and, you know, my wife could see instantly if I just, you know, why are you spending money at Murphy's Pub, Tim? We should be able to see, why are you depositing money, Senator, from this check? What are they getting for that $3,000 contribution? So,
I mean, think about it. Why aren't these meetings public record? You know, when Congress meets, there's a transcript. You know, there are minutes. I mean, why isn't it that, you know, every communication with a lobbyist is recorded?
Yeah.
You know, and it's available for the public to listen to.
And even if they need the privacy, say I'm a company, I'm coming in, I'm going to say, okay, let me tell you, we have a unique business model in this business, and so there needs to be some privacy. The nature of the discussion and the fact that it happened, I think, is certainly the public's business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course. Of course. Well, good stuff. Well, Tim, do you want to talk just before you wrap up here about Obamanomics? Because that's your other book. Do you just have the two books?
Yeah. So the big ripoff and Obamanomics are the same theme. They're the idea that big business and big government are often allies. Big business benefits from and lobbies for big government to the detriment of the consumer, the competitor, and the taxpayer. In Obamanomics, what I did was I just took a look at Obama's policies, not, you know, a big ripoff. I go back to the Whiskey Rebellion and talk about Teddy Roosevelt and that sort of thing. But in Obamanomics, I just point out how the drug industry wrote a huge portion of Obamacare, how the stimulus was sort of it was Christmas for lobbyists here in D.C. I wrote about how Obama was the one man who could have stopped the bank bailout. He didn't. One of his fundraisers was Warren Buffett, who invested millions in Goldman Sachs because he knew the bailout was going to happen, and then he made bank off of it, and all these things. Not that Obama is worse on this than previous presidents, but that Obama had promised to be different, had promised to freeze out the lobbyists, and obviously did not, and that the special interests have been winning as much under President Obama as they have under every previous president, which obviously was not what hope and change was supposed to be about.
Yeah, no question about it. It's just unbelievable. I just kind of wonder what's going to become of our country. You know, there are so many really positive things, and I think almost all of them revolve around technology and innovation, which is just awesome. I mean, in so many ways, Tim, we're living in an amazing time. And, you know, maybe technology and, you know, mostly related to communication will save us. You know, you mentioned before how, you know, people can get together, and you talked about SOPA and so forth. And as long as that's really allowed to be this democratized, free level playing field, that's, you know, that maybe that will save us. But when you look at it on the government side and the big corporate side, I'm like, wow, it's just the abuses that are happening are insane. And I tell you, I kind of think that during our natural lives, we're going to see a strong and serious secession movement. I don't know. I have no idea if you have any thoughts about that, but
no, I mean, I don't. I'm somebody who thinks that, you know, the United States is a pretty strong country, and that things will proceed basically, you know, without major changes. But that I do think often that technological development will result in people being more able to sort of live their lives in a lot of ways. Now, it obviously could cut the other way. The state uses the power of technology in ways that infringe on our freedom. But a lot of it, even if the politicians and the bureaucrats want to sort of force us into a funnel and uniformity, that becomes harder. That things like, when you look at things like Uber, when you look at things like people, you know, they're getting cell phones, they're not being tied down, all of a sudden you see, wait a second, we can make a lot of these regulations are unneeded. And so I think that sort of, you know, my version of a secession movement I think we're going to get is not going to be a political one, but people are going to find it easier to live their own lives without dependence on the big businesses, on the big, we're not as dependent on duopolies or monopolies in a lot of businesses. I have friends, Nick Gillespie and Matt Welch, who wrote a book about that. Maybe that'll happen in politics, but often politics just adjusts to what, you know, what the people are doing, and that technology will be, in a lot of cases, a fairly liberating thing.
Yeah, technology does in many ways have the result of fragmenting marketplaces. I mean, on one hand, it gives, you know, big government and big business a scalability advantage and allows them to scale really quickly. But it also allows this fragmentation where there's more consumer choice in many ways, and you know, there's more of the long tail concept. And more democratization, more startups. You know, let's just keep a vibrant startup business environment because that's where all the innovation comes from. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And that's always what matters most to me, is if there's innovation and experimentation that's allowed, then, you know, we'll do well. If there's not, then we get what we got in the airline industry for decades, which is stagnation. As long as people are allowed to innovate and experiment, you know, I think we're going to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, good stuff. Good thoughts. Tim Carney, thank you so much for joining us today. Give out your website. Tell people where they can find out more about you.
Yeah, so visit WashingtonExaminer.com. That's where I write, and my fellowship is at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI.org.
And, of course, the books are on Amazon and all the usual places, right?
Everywhere you can buy books online. The Big Ripoff and Obamanomics.
All right. Tim Carney, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.